This is Doctoring Up Design, a lively, interactive, and educational series presented by Design Hardware and held in their ever-evolving showroom on 3rd Street in Los Angeles. Doctoring Up Design was created to address your pain points in the constantly changing world of design, architecture, and development. Doctoring Up Design features the most knowledgeable and creative designers, architects, manufacturers, and product designers in the business today to help you build a healthy and strong design practice. As California moves one step closer to an all-electric home, environment's changing. Designers must learn how to work with and around all of the changing regulations. Because sustainable design is here to stay, this is a conversation about high design style on the cutting edge of performative technology, and will include design for current and future electricity consumption as homes become all electric, manage electrical loads when adding electrical appliances, induction, cooking options, how can solar affect your design choices, when will your client need to upgrade the panel to accommodate increased need for electrical capacity, net metering, and the effects on monthly electricity costs, LED lighting design options to replace outmoded incandescent bulbs, and so much more. Guests include Andres Saldivar. He's a senior engineer for Southern California Edison's EEC in Irwindale. He manages the Food Service Technology Center, engaged with energy efficiency testing on food service equipment, customer demonstrations, and food service education seminars. He has been with Southern California Edison for over 15 years now, and Andre is one of the technical leads for the statewide food service rebate program for the California investor-owned utilities. You're going to get a lot of information from him. Stephen Powran's background in construction, architecture, architectural history, painting, and set design has aided him in pulling together the diverse group of artists, craftsmen, architects, and designers who work on the Carbon Shack projects. His father was a scientist and an educator, and his mother, an educator and patron of the arts. This exposure to art, science, and education led him to realize that building is an environmentally conscious manner is unimportant if you don't communicate the need and educate the consumer. Ben Stapleton is an LA native who brings a creative mind and consultative approach to a wide range of projects with a focus on building teams and designing programs to deliver impactful results. His current work is based on coordinating an ecosystem leveraging the built environment as an entry point and connective fabric to help create a more sustainable society for all as executive director for the U.S. GBC in Los Angeles. That's the U.S. Green Building Council in Los Angeles for those who are not familiar. I'm Josh Cooperman. I host Doctoring Up Design. And really, I'm pleased to bring you this conversation, an important conversation, and one that, realize it or not, will affect every designer, architect, and client, regardless of locale. It's not just LA and New York. Has your weather been strange lately? Yes. And climate change is responsible for that. It's coming fast because it's already here. Here's what you need to know about home electrification. You will hear that guests were asked to send links to certain elements of which they speak. If not here currently, please check back often to the show notes and they'll be modified as new information is submitted, which will give you a plethora of new data by which to continue your learning journey. I am really proud to present Electrified, the shocking truth and almost everything you need to know to design the fully electric space. Enjoy. Design Hardware is your one-stop design resource for stunning hardware, flooring, and unique brands that allow designers to stand out and create incredible projects, like those from Velcromat, panel made of wood fibers that are colored in the production process. The colorant are chemically bound to one another in a special resin, which gives the end product a deep, rich color matched with custom textures and added dimension. This high-density product is moisture-resistant, high-density, higher strength, simple to work with, and yields extraordinary results. Design Hardware is where you will find brands blazing new trails like Velcromat. For more information about Velcromat by Investwood and other extraordinary companies changing the look and feel of luxury design, visit designhardware.com or on the socials at Design Hardware and Flooring.
I'm extremely excited to be having this conversation because this topic has come up a lot and continues to come up a lot. First thing I'd like to do, and Steve, I'm gonna start with you, and we'll go this way. We introduce yourselves so that everyone, it's funny because I could read the bios, but I always like to hear and to have other people hear about you in your own words.
Okay.
What's your story?
Keep it short or keep it long?
Can you define yourself right now?
Right. So Stephen Palran, and so I'm the head of Carbon Shack and also Home Front Builds. We have two firms, and Carbon Shack is our design construction firm that that really specializes in helping people optimize their relationship with the environment, really understanding their impacts and how what they do, how they design and build and all that, how that impacts the climate and the environment. So really helping people instill their values into their shelters. So where I began. My dad named me after Uncle Stevie, who was a subsistence farmer in the upper Adirondacks. And my dad, who came from an urban provincial center, loved to go to Uncle Stevie's place because Uncle Stevie lived completely sustainably. Okay, we can call it poverty, but it was also sustainable. And he just loved the fact that there was an outhouse they canned and all that. And I guess that's who I was named after, and that's my journey.
Love it.
Well, it's hard to follow Uncle Steve. It's hard to follow. My name's Ben Stapleton. I'm the executive director for the U.S. Green Building Council, Los Angeles. We're an independent nonprofit really focused on leveraging the built environment and buildings as an entry point to help create a more sustainable region for all here in Southern California. I'm sort of a sustainability generalist, but I'm a green building nerd at heart, and I've been in the real estate space for probably 20-plus years now. And I'm really excited about the conversation we're going to have today. I think, you know, we're at a moment where people are realizing more and more that buildings account for more than 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions. And there's things that we can do and that we have to do to change that if we're going to help fight climate change.
And I'm Andre Sulver. I'm a senior engineer for the Southern California Edison Utility. I manage our Food Service Technology Center. I've been there about 17 years. I was previously with the gas company. As an engineer over there in the emerging technology and some of the food service applications as well. Here at Edison, I'm a mechanical engineer from Cal Poly Pomona, so not a chef at all. So I've learned to adapt and cook and different things like that, working with the food service equipment from residential to commercial, whether it's manufactured in the USA or across the world. So a lot of this equipment is becoming more unique. And it's some of it's user-friendly, some of it's not. So looking forward to have this conversation about, we talked about climate change, and I just heard this on the news on the way in. It is, and if people don't realize it, I think Phoenix and Texas are going to have break records for 20 days of over 110 degrees. So think about that, 110 degrees for 20 days straight. And so, you know, he said if you don't think climate change is real, we're going to set records that we've never set before, and it is because of the climate change and it's warm. So 110 for 20 days straight. I don't know.
So here's what's interesting about that. It doesn't actually matter what people think about climate change anymore anyway. Water levels rise. It's getting hotter. It's staying hotter. Whatever you think is kind of immaterial at this point. So I want to start with you. In practical terms, where we are now, what does that do for the grid, and what does that mean for those who are on the grid, and when it gets hot, what does that do? And I guess we're starting kind of backwards about the why you do something,
right,
and then what you do about it.
Right.
Why does it matter?
So to your point, it's here, right? So whatever you think or don't think or agree with or don't agree with, it's here. We're living in it every day. Last year was a perfect example. We broke records in Southern California with that temperature. And this week's another perfect example. The heat just came on us. You know, we're expected 100 in the valleys and in the Inland Empire. And so people responded with the flex alerts and stuff like that. So the utilities are sending out messages and things like that, but it really happens to behavioral change and people adopting it. people that had EVs, you can see the difference in response in the media that people that didn't have EVs and some people that did have EVs. So, wait, you want us to buy electric cars, but the grid can't handle it. But yet we got out of that last year, and we didn't have to have any rolling blackouts because people responded. So those people that had EVs actually responded in charge after 9 o'clock and things like that. So I think there's a lot of education that needs to take place, right, with electrification and whether EV and all that. But I think those people that are doing it understand it, and they're doing their job. All right, we all have a job now because, like I said, it's here. We're living it every day. Whether accept or not accept it, we're beyond that point. It's here. So I think it's up to all of us to adopt it and see what we can do in everybody's part, whether you increase your thermostat a couple degrees or you charge, after 9 or things like that. And it makes it easy. If you own an EV, you can plug it in at 5 and tell it charge at 9 and have a good night's rest. You don't have to wake up at 9 o'clock. If you're an early bird like me, sometimes I fall asleep before that. I don't have to worry about, did I set it at 9, right? And so I think with the technology like that, but it comes down to us owning it and behavioral change.
Can I just add something to what he said?
Yeah, please.
I one of the moments is, again, as a sort of a nerd that I liked last year was, it was the first time we'd had a call that went out from the state. They texted everyone. Everybody got a text alert to reduce their power use, and we did. And I just found that we were able to avoid blackouts because people responded to that. And that was a pretty profound moment because that had never happened before, but it just showed the power of people to be able to come together to really respond and react to a situation when we are informed, right? And we are connected and we know what to do. So I just wanted to kind of mention that.
Right. To that point, you're right. We hit a record. We used the most megawatts ever in California, mm-hmm. and it avoided the blackout because people responded.
Because people saw their phone, they reduced their power use collectively, which is, that's just a powerful thing to think about.
So, to the product, because you work in this every day. Take us through the product, the options. When someone says sustainable design, what are some of the first things that you start to talk about from a product and then a procedural standpoint?
First of all, I have to say, what you're talking about is people's reactive, they're reacting to the moment. I have to say that one of the most difficult things to do is to, I work in a liberal city, and most of my clients are liberal and have environmental values. It is almost impossible to get people to spend extra money to go sustainable. And that is just a fact. If it's bad here, if I'm having a hard time here with my wealthy progressive clients, then I'm sure it's worse than some other states. So it's just really difficult to get people to spend extra money on going green. So what are the ways to, there are sort of, government can be prescriptive and tell us what to do. If I were Josh, I would say you get them through design, because I know that's your mantra, and I do agree with that. Why do people drive Teslas? They drive Teslas because they're cutting-edge technology, they're fun to drive, they're amazing, they're just great. Oh, and they're all electric and sustainable. So that's the argument I try to get to with people is, creating all electric houses. We talk about induction cooktops and things like that. And induction cooktops, I just have to tell people about, 90% of the energy in an induction cooktop goes into the cooking vessel. If you're cooking with gas, 70% of the energy goes into the atmosphere, and it's also, pollution and things like that. So, they're beautiful objects, so we try to get them, through designing this, this sexier, healthier house.
Okay, so let's talk about the challenges. And I can speak to this firsthand. So I'm in Tulsa. I think I told you guys this story. Had induction installed. We had an old gas removed, put induction in. I you're gonna hear this a lot, because I did what many of the other people will do, and most people will do, is didn't quite get rid of the gas, just capped it, put a 90 on it, tucked it back inside the wall, just in case. But what's interesting is, in Tulsa, when the electrician came out, he was like, oh, I've never done one of these before, which always instills confidence. But what was interesting about it was there were wholesale changes that had to take place. You had to change things. You don't just plug the oven in, right? So what are you being told? What comes from within, when it's like, look, people are going to have to change a lot of things, and this is for both of you,
as far as if you want people to make changes, you have to make it easy for them, right? So there are changes that have to be made. You have to make changes at the panel. You have to make changes at the breaker. You have to make changes at the point of service, right? So walk me through that and what most people say, what are the common complaints, and what is the common response?
So not just on induction, but heat pump water heaters, is I think it's a three-legged stool. One, you got to educate the customer, the end user, like yourself, right? What is it? How am I going to use it? Two, you got to educate the installer, right? To your point, he's never done it before. And three, any type of jurisdiction or local building code you got in, they've never seen it before. They probably won't approve it if you go through the permit process on the major remodel. So I think education is hitting. You got to hit all three legs of that stool. If not, you're going to have challenges like you did. So. What we're seeing is, under can I put a heat pump water heater induction? Well, yeah, you can, but I think that's the farthest you're going to be able to go. Our recommendation is to upgrade the panel right off the bat. Then you're allowed to do the EV and the heat pump water heater and electric fireplace. You know, electric fireplaces are becoming a lot more. They're to this point, they're sexy, they're pretty, you know, they're nice and clean. You don't have to clean them after, right? Less labor there as well. So just what is your plan? Are you planning only to do EV? You got to talk to the client or the end user. What is your goal here, right? Because the bigger goal would be upgrade the panel first and any of the wiring and stuff like that. To ease that or make it easy, as you mentioned, and I'll give an example right over here in Santa Monica is perfect. They're giving you a rebate on the panel, they're giving you a rebate on the induction cooktop, but the biggest, and you probably know all this being in construction, is they're giving you a one-time permit. So if you do induction, all you do is file the one induction permit. If you're doing a panel upgrade, you're doing it. And so Santa Monica's making that easy on the permit process, on the construction side, the end user going in. It's a single trade permit and you're able to do it. So I use Santa Monica because I think they're, to your point, they're making it easier for those people that want to move over, convert, and stuff like that. Whether it's a panel, EV, induction, electric dryer, there's a one-time single permit. You know, you're almost in and out, and the inspector knows what you're doing. So there are some cities that are getting it, right, and helping those end users and construction and the permitting and everything in between. Get to them, get it faster.
A couple things I want to emphasize in what he said. I think we're in many ways kind of underestimating the importance of education right now and how far we have to go. You know, to hit that three-legged stool is not a small feat, right? We're talking about educating, you know, consumers, which is has all its own channels, right, to figure that out. The contractor community, right, the building community. So this has to be connected. And we have a long way to go. So, the more education awareness we can start with, and the fact that we know already, honestly, that the panel is going to be a major hurdle, you know, that's really where we need to be looking at. Well, how do we incentivize as much as possible? How do we roll those out? You know, we're talking right now just about people who have the means and the ends and have the time, energy, and the interest in dedicating that to going through this process. That's a very small percentage, realistically, of the community of the homes that are out there. And you know, if we're going to get into low-income communities that are going to need additional assistance, if we're getting people who aren't, you know, design experts and home building experts, right? We need to make this a much more accessible process. And so, I just want to emphasize that we're, you know, really still at the very start of kind of advancing into that evolution of the market, and we need to be thinking about, well, how do we evolve the market faster? How do we get these things out that faster? How do we get information like what we're doing right now out there faster, because otherwise, you know, it's going to take so long for us to hit the goals that we need to hit.
Can I add to that?
Please.
The weakness in residential construction, which is my primary market, is that most subcontractors are, let's call them mom and pop shops. They're a single person. So for them to go out and do a new induction cooktop, they're going to lose money. They're going to lose money a couple times. Therefore, there's no incentive for them to really try something new. I still know HVAC, you know, subs who want to just put in the gas unit because they've done it 30 years, they know it, they can make money.
Well, they don't want liability.
They're going to get callbacks. So what I would say is that, you know, can a utility do a training program so that people don't lose money? Instead of, turn education around, bring them in, or sponsor an installation so that they do this six times, they don't lose money, they have somebody overseeing them. Because the weakness in residential is just because these are not large companies, these are mom and pop shops, and so you have to look at the, you know, their bottom line and their risk factor.
Yeah, and to answer that, we do because of COVID, a lot of that education training is virtual, and our next step is to actually bring in, you know, the plumbers and electricians. Not only talk about the new title codes and stuff like that, but the hands-on training. And the state is, they call it WET, Workforce Education and Training, and they're funding that. And so that's our next step, is actually bring in, because, you know, I take pictures of some of these installations and it's just backwards, right? Because like you said, they know the gas that they've been doing it for 34, and it's been passed on, right? Or what we're seeing is a lot of those people that have been doing are getting out of the trade, right, because they're just done, right? But back to the three-legged stool, we got to educate at the same time, because at any time that three-legged stool could come unbalanced, right?
You see one leg disappear right back off.
So yeah. Hang on a second. I want to take that idea and I want to pivot. I want to go in a different direction, because one of the things where I think it gets really important is education on the consumer side is a dubious process at best, right? But I feel like education process on the professional side, and I'm not talking about installers, I'm really talking about designers, mm-hmm. designers and architects, right? If you can teach a designer how to do this, and you can teach them what they need to understand, I learned a long time ago in talking to creatives that the last thing a designer wants is to be put in a position where they could potentially look like they don't know something in front of their client. That's the last thing a designer wants, because then they lose credibility. And all of the things that they do right suffer because of that one thing. And this is one of those scary things where it's like, I'm not totally sure about induction. I hear everybody talking about it. I think it's a great idea. But when my client says, but I love cooking with gas, I don't know what to say in response to that. I don't know why to give them the why. The why is because with gas, you cook for the flame. With induction, you cook for the food. It's a different, it's an education process, like you said. But look, we learned to cook food on fire first. Gas is fire. That hasn't changed in a very, very long time, right? So trying to teach people how to cook differently, which is the very essence of life, right? That's an uphill battle for whatever reason you're doing it. So here's my question. I will throw it out to Steve. Why don't you go first? How do you educate the design community how to understand what the options are? We're talking about induction, but there's water heaters, there's geothermal, there's other products as well. But since we're really talking about electrification, how do you teach the design community how to manage this and how to take it from the rooftop to the point of use?
Yeah. Well, induction cooktop is sort of or cooking is the, the canary in the coal mine or something, but if you can get people into induction cooktop, you can get an all-electric house, because it's easy to discuss heat pump hot water, easy to discuss heat pump heating, cooling, you know, EVs, all that. It's the cooktop, the cooking, that is the hardest. So we at Snyder Diamond, you know, the appliance showroom, we did we brought in the ASID Pasadena, and we showed, you know, we answered those questions, stuff like that. I mean, it's kind of easy to, you just have to, and of course, you know, a lot of people hadn't cooked on induction, so they had a lot of questions. But yes, as soon as you introduce them to it, you can answer the questions. I mean, flame is, you know, the kiss of flame, you really only do on the barbecue. For the most part, we're using flame to heat our cookie vessel. So we're not kissing the food with flame, except, you know, for the most part, when we're cooking outside. So yeah, I mean, just educating design professionals and hold events to do that.
I also think that, you know, as people interact with their clients, at the end of the day, we're selling a dream, right? We're selling a lifestyle. If you're in that lifestyle where you're, you know, you have solar in your home and you're driving an EV, you know, to your point, like, we care about how we cook because we're engaging with it. Most part, none of us don't really care where our heat's coming from, as long as it's costing us an amount that we feel comfortable with and it's working. We don't really care, right? So when we're putting a heat pump in a home, great. My HVAC's working, my heat's working, and it's costing me potentially less. I mean, that's one thing we should note, is that heat pump hot water heaters, you know, are more, you know, heat pump technology is more efficient overall. It's going to save people money. But, you know, coming to that lifestyle and that dream, I think we need to talk to people about having a healthier environment. You know, the fact that we have off-gassing in our homes, and we have data that's showing now that that's having impacts on asthma for kids, and that's having impacts on those who are doing the cooking. We're trying to embrace a cleaner, healthier lifestyle, and that's something that I think designers can sell to their clients and show that they're looking out for their best interests, right? And help them imagine this lifestyle. Well, hey, you're never going to the gas station. You're filling up at home, using your solar and your EV. You're coming into a home that's a smart home, that's connected, that's working well. You're cooking your food in a more efficient manner, and you're going to have lower bills when everything's working together the right way. If that makes sense.
It does. Okay. You're an ME. You don't need to be nobody needs to explain to you the mechanics of how this works. Designers did not go to school for engineering, most of them anyway. What is the education opportunity? What has Southern California Edison, what do you do as far as the education that you talk about? It's a daunting prospect. What is the easiest way to take the information that you have that you want them to get and to insert it in? How do you teach that?
Right. So, to Steve's point, induction, it's really about demonstration as well. You can watch videos, you can see it on different things, but you really got to touch and feel it. And so, we offer the center, and I know Irwindale is not the most centered area, and so that's why we partnered with UGBCLA and gone out and done, and we'll do that. We can go out and do some education. We can have a summer here. We can bring induction cooktops here and demonstrate and thing like that. The appliance, the manufacturers are on it. I'll go back to the very beginning. It's here. And so the manufacturers, some of them are like, oh, we'll wait. Well, it's like the food service consultants. You know, I'll go back a little bit on the commercial. Google, Yahoo, Apple, they're already sustainable, right? They're moving. And so if I had products in there and now they're designing new kitchens and I didn't have an electric option, guess what? I lost that bid. And a lot of manufacturers did. And so same thing with a residential. They're moving more and more into induction. And I saw that recently with the PCBC show right here in Anaheim. And so education, we can do 15-minute, we can do an hour and a half. But I think we got to have the demonstration part of it. You got to be able to get the designers in here and touch feeling. And so what is a 1800 watt does versus a 2500 watt, you know, things like that. Because a video or a 15 slide presentation, I don't think it hits home. I think you got to get them here, you know, and that's our approach is we'll go to you, we'll show up here, we'll team up with anybody, association, the designer community, and we'll do it. And so we're very flexible because that's the only way we're going to move the needle.
Okay, so hang on. I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that. And here's why I think this is a good group to have this conversation. You're the provider. You're an advocate. You're client direct. Can we all agree that getting people, be it designers or anyone else, out of their homes now to a place dealing with LA traffic, in LA weather, with other things going on, is a bigger challenge now than it has been in the past? Can we also agree that from a sustainability standpoint, we don't necessarily want to put more people on the road to come and learn how to do something to save, you know what I mean?
Right.
Okay. If we can stipulate to that, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a way that we can educate both the design community, who then become some of your best assets,
yes,
right? Because if we can educate the design community, they can then go to the client and do the education for you.
Right.
So how do we work together to get designers, those in the trade, those in the business, to understand how this works and where the benefits are? Because I think you're spot on about, you know, you're going to lose jobs, whether you're losing them now or it's going to take time, you know, loss in the future. That is going to happen. But you want to be educated so that you don't look silly in front of your clients. Totally get that, too. There's got to be a better way. What is the better way?
Can we talk about the numbers for a second? I think, you know, with the Inflation Reduction Act and the tax incentives that are there, I think that's a real opportunity for designers to learn a little bit about the numbers, and things are becoming clearer all the time. But, you know, if someone can save $2,000 on their taxes from putting in a heat pump, that's that opportunity for that designer to distinguish themselves, right? Somebody else maybe who's bidding on that same job, say, here's, these incentives aren't going to be here forever, but here's what you can do now that's going to help this job. And so I think we need to getting the numbers out there a lot more and having people use those as a way to educate their clients.
You're totally correct. In the Reduction Act, you know, looking through that, they actually separate wire and panel. So, I mean, they broke it up. Before, it used to just be if you were doing electric upgrade, you can write off the panel, part of the panel. But they actually broke up the wiring and the panel and the EV and all that. So there's a lot more money, to his point. But we try to crack that by saying sustainability, people on the road, and we have an induction lending program. So if any designer out there would like to borrow a unit, you can do it from Edison for up to 14 days. And we either send it to you or we drop it off. And so we were trying to crack that. I know people don't want to come out and stuff like that. So it's been a successful. The pre-questionnaire and the post-quote survey is completely different. I tried it. I like it. Right? And so there's a library on there. It's SE.com, the induction lending library. It's 14 days, and you create an account. It's almost like an Amazon cart. You grab the unit. You grab your pot, your pen, your cells. And to hit his point where the disadvantage of hard-to-reach customer language barrier, we've added, like, hot pot, Korean barbecue, Go Miles and Blanchos, like that, accessories that can go on induction to say, to your point, hey, I still like gas for a certain product or a certain menu or recipe that I, well, try this accessory on the induction. It might get to your recipe that you're there. So we've created that library that's been very successful that if you can't come out, you're too busy, try it for yourself. So then if you try it, then you can start to recommend to your clients that, hey, I tried it. If you didn't like it, then you didn't like it, but at least you have something that you tried. You didn't have to spend any money on it, and you know, it's free. So that's one way we try to tackle that.
We need a cooking show. We need an induction, because what are we battling? We're battling, you know, right. Iron Chef. Yeah, right. We're battling the flame, you know, the theatricality of it. So we need a cooking show.
Do you know what, seriously? That's genius.
You know, I wanted to start one.
I think you're spot on. Yeah. And because I was going to go to, so we talk about rolling blackouts.
Right.
Okay? It's a common occurrence, which is why, you know, here we are at Design Hardware, where we talk about products all the time. It's like, if you... what can you use? What kind of products are available? And there are a lot that are available to help certain things and certain, you know, this is a sustainable product. This is it's going to help keep things cooler product. This is going to keep things warmer product. It's amazing the products that are available. Ultimately, so we get a rolling blackout. AC's out. And you can't cook. How do you overcome that objection?
You know, that is actually interesting. One of the best selling points I have now is that with solar, you have a battery backup, and then you can, you know, have, you know, some critical circuits running. Because people with a lot of rolling blackouts, they're trying to get gas generators now. The downside is what people say back to me is they say, oh, I'm going to keep my gas range because then I can cook during the blackout. But anyway, I do try to argue that with the battery backup, you're able to sustain your house for a while.
So we get that question all the time. So when we do our street fairs or we're out in the field doing it, you know, we'll have 220-volt units going, and people are asking how you're doing it. Well, we have a battery inverter right underneath that's running it, so you can be able to get to it. And even they're available at Costco now and all. We have a SE.com marketplace where you can buy those battery inverters. So it's funny, they'll look, and we have them right there, and they're like, well, I don't see any extension cords. I said, yeah, we're using a battery. To answer your blackout question, you'll be able to get through the lunch.
So there is a fix for that.
Yes.
Never knew that.
Yeah.
And I'm in the biz. I mean, I do a lot of research. Yeah. Never knew that.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the education side of this. I think a cooking show on an induction, okay, but now let's talk about what the options are. So 30, 36, pretty much standard on induction, right? What about the person who says, well, I want a 48. I want for my indoor luxury kitchen, 36 is great. We can just, you know, that's fine. But for the working kitchen in the back, for the secondary kitchen, the dirty kitchen, the working kitchen, the one where we do all the splatter and the high heat, and I want a 48 because I want it to be ultra-functional. What do you tell them? And then, if you have a 36 on the front and a 48 on the back, what's the pull on that?
Well, are you going to... the other thing is, are you going to use them both? And then all the other thing is, you know, some will have four or six burners, and unless you're cooking for huge feast and a huge family and gathering, then you would probably use. But other than that, you're not going to. And the good thing about induction, it's idle. As soon as you recool it, there is no idle. There's no energy use, right? And so there is 48s. We've had a couple of home builders and designers ask for that. And so there is a couple of manufacturers that make 48. But then we're also getting into a whole new request with ADUs. So there's 24 inches out there now. There's drop-ins and there's suites out there. So now I got 24, I got 30, I got 36, and I got 48. Right, we just need somebody to request a 72 or 60. Right?
Well, can I add too? I think that the part of the advantage with induction is getting some of that counter space back, also, because I think that's a big thing as we look at from a design perspective, how we better utilize the space we have. You know, when you're not cooking, you can use that space hopefully in different ways. Just something to point out.
Everybody, a lot of appliance manufacturers make induction, but the problem is there's not a lot of design options out there now. So you know, that's what we think for finding.
Yeah, so 24 hit the market, I think, last year at PCBC, and this year I've seen a drop-in, and I've seen a full oven suite. And we have a few of those in our center now, just to show that they're coming out. There's a few manufacturers paying attention, like, hey.
And there are a few dual-fuel ones, which are induction with gas, and a couple of my clients have bought that, which is exactly like in the period when electricity was first introduced to homes back in the early 1900s, we had dual fuel light fixtures because people were used to gas, and then the electric hung down below because that was the new thing. People weren't quite sure about the new electric thing. Mm-hmm. So,
will there ever be an outdoor option
for
induction?
Yes, I think it would be a little bit more of a commercial grade unit, but you can get a single phase 208, 50 amp, 30 amp, 40 amp.
You know, ultimately, what it comes down to is we're talking when we talk about the kitchen in particular, we're talking about the kitchen of the future, right? I remember for an episode of the podcast, I did a review of a movie made by Westinghouse in the 1950s, hosted by Betty Furness, and it was 30 minutes, 45 minutes, I mean, it was long. And you can find it on YouTube. It's still there. And I'll tell you what, if you go to the podcast, Doctoring Up Design, I will put a link in the show notes to the video so that you can watch it. Here's what was interesting. This was done in the 1950s. And they were talking about the home of the future being fully electric. It was Westinghouse. They wanted everything to be electric. And, I mean, it was so... They were talking about, well, the woman of the house is going to love this kitchen, where, you know, the man of the house is going to love all the technology and the gadgets, right? But once you get past that, you think about what was provided. The timer to water the lawns, that wasn't common. That wasn't in the 50s. They didn't have that. The Ring doorbell was predicated on this idea. There was a camera at the door that showed on an 8-inch black and white TV screen. Everything was electric. They didn't have the idea or even the thought process that you'd power it from the sun with solar. Solar wasn't even a concept in this. So you're still pulling, right, from the grid. But it's interesting that it took this long for this idea that we're kind of being forced to go in this direction. Is there a kickback because people feel like they're being forced to do this? You know how sometimes, like, you're going to have to eat your vegetables. You know, if you want your dessert, you're going to have to eat your vegetables. Are people being forced into this? Are you seeing your clients kicking back at all just because they don't want to be forced to do something?
No, I mean, nobody's forced them to do it. I mean, most people who are interested in it look at the beauty of living with free energy within 5 years. I mean, with the IRA increased the tax credit 30% again, and they applied it to batteries too. So now, you know, people within 5 years, a residential home can get the ROI, and they can be just 30, 40 years from now, still producing free electricity. So there's a beauty to being cost effective.
Yeah, and I think the forcing will start to happen more and more, and part of the argument is really around the opportunity to future proof your home, whether it's now and it's a new build or you're doing a retrofit. At some point, policy is going to require that everything is all electric. The code's headed that way from the state level. City of LA has already banned gas and new developments. We're working on policy to figure out how to do that for retrofit projects and when that'll hit for existing buildings. So part of this should be looked at, how do you really future-proofing your kitchen, your asset? You're going to have to do this anyway. how do you control that and do that in a way that you can have that positive ROI and have that enjoyable experience? At some point, it will start to be required. Right? So we're in that adoption phase now where you can control it.
One of those interesting things about the requirements in commercial is that then manufacturers begin to make things like low-flow toilets and stuff like that. Then they look for new markets because we're manufacturing these things, and then they move into the residential. Right. So there are less requirements in residential, but as the requirements grow in commercial, there's that trickle-down factor in residential to allow more products.
How do you overcome? Yes, regulation is coming. If you don't do it voluntarily, it will be forced, right? How do you overcome, there is low flow, like you mentioned, but there is a certain clientele that will just be like, fine, wait for the inspection to come through, and then I'll go to Arizona to buy my new toilets. I'll go to Nevada to buy my new shower heads. How do you combat that idea as you look back? And if it sounds like I'm being argumentative, I want to poke as many holes in this as I possibly can, because once you do that, then you get on the positive side of it, right? The low flow forcing on, every time you sold your house, you had to have the low flow shower heads, you had to have the low flow toilets just to be able to transfer property. And the low flow shower heads are probably the most complained about object in California real estate.
I don't think that's true anymore. When I first moved to California, I had a low flow shower head and I felt like I was being cut by lasers. Now you have rain shower head. I thought it was in a James Bond movie. Now you have the rain shower heads that are amazing. So I think, you force that on people, and then people have the 1 gallon flush toilet and they're like, oh, the poop went down. Hey, I don't need to change it out because I'm enjoying my shower and I don't have a flush choice.
Well, that's like
the technology.
The
technology is...
I get you. You're absolutely right in the laser example. I totally get it. The difference is, though, that's kind of like the technology company approach. We go in, we break stuff, and then we figure out how to make it better. But meanwhile, you've sort of disenfranchised all these people who've been cut by the lasers, and they don't want to experience.
Yeah, the consumer's like, I'll just wait until it stops cutting me like a laser.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's of primary importance to you if your company wants to be able to continue to provide the kind of service that is not just expected but demanded of you.
Right.
How do you combat that? Education.
Yes. Well, no, and we're you know, we are. It's everybody talks about a grid and reliable, and that's our first step is to make it a reliable grid. Whether it's conduit, wire in the high wind areas and stuff like that. We have those shutoffs, and every Thanksgiving is getting better. 2 years ago, we had 70,000. Last year, it was 7,000. So the numbers are dropping, and every Thanksgiving it seems to get better each year by the improvements on the grid. Doesn't happen overnight, so bear with us. The recent COVID didn't help as well with either product or material or anything like that. That happened across any type of, you couldn't get ketchup and syrup and stuff like that. So, we're always going to have the combating. We just figure out, demonstrate. But I think those people that still have gas cars are still, I think 450 is a norm, right? I don't know. People still complaining, but they're still filling up every day. People are still getting laser showered and stuff like that. I think you just learn to adopt it after a while.
The challenge is, and we're working on a water project right now, and there's a very passionate man from P&G who's leading this. It's called the 50 Liter Home Initiative, and he's Franz from France, is his name. But he always says, we have to make 50 liters feel like 500, right? We have to focus on the experience. And I think that's honestly where we need the help of the design communities to say, hey, what's working, what's not working, what are clients responding to? Until we have that rain shower that's actually delivering the experience, we need to think about how do we get to that end goal as quickly as possible. How do we get over those hurdles? Because the utility can't do it alone, right? The design community can't do it alone without the engagement from the manufacturers. So I think this is a time, frankly, where we need the design community telling us more and more too. What are you hearing from clients? What does people want? How can we shorten that loop for innovation, make that happen faster?
Yeah, the big problem with green construction is people think it's, you know, living in a yurt with an outhouse. So, yeah. But it's not.
That's one type.
Yeah.
That's Uncle Steve, right?
Uncle Steve,
the extreme type.
But it's not that way. I mean, we have rain shower heads and you know, things like that. So, right. You know, that's
well,
not...
what's interesting, too, is that designers today don't work in isolation. You know, some of the most successful designers working today don't just work in Los Angeles or California. You know, they're working in Hawaii, and they're working in Europe, and they're working in New York, and they're working in... I was recently talking to a designer who works a great deal in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and it was funny because their one Home Depot is kind of like, it's the difference between a Walmart Supercenter and a Walmart local grocery store. Like, you walk in there expecting the Walmart Supercenter, you're not going to find it, right? You walk in the Home Depot in the U.S. Virgin Islands, you're not going to find the same thing. So it takes a lot of time for things to get there. You're working on luxury projects at the same time. You're also pulling a lot less energy because of necessity. And so induction in some of these places have been there for a very long time. They're kind of like the norm. Like once that technology became available, it's like, this is a perfect option for us. Yeah. And I think that it behooves designers and architects to understand this product and to understand what all of these options are so that when they have clients elsewhere, they can apply sort of a universal standard. Yes?
Yeah, it's also the showrooms. It's about availability of material. I mean, the small mom and pop, HVAC sub doesn't want to do something new. Well, it's also true about showrooms. If showrooms aren't featuring these things and pushing them, and they're not available, and you're a designer and you got a bunch of clients, you got to make decisions. Boom, make this client happy, and you can make them happy with non-sustainable materials and get recommendations. So it's also about the showroom, bringing these things to the design professionals.
So as we close this out, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to come back this way. Okay. What did we not cover? What did we not address that we should have?
I'll hit on Steve's last point. Putting induction in model homes. You're never going to get that discussion going if you don't have it in. No chef has to be there. You don't even have to turn it on. But if I'm looking at model homes and I walk through and I see a piece of glass, that's probably going to start a conversation or make me think, well, what is that? That's where the stove is supposed to go. So what is that? So that at least starts the conversation, and then I can go to the home builder and say, well, what is that? What are my options and stuff like that? But without it in the model homes, you're never going to get that discussion or even those first thoughts going. So I agree with that, and I keep telling the home builders, you put one in your model home, that'll start discussion. So I think we had intention on that is more of you can put it in places where people can see it. I think that's going to start discussion and the wondering and the Google research. Right now, I walked out of the home and I'm going to Google that appliance and what does it look like? What does it do? How much does it cost? Things like that. So without it having in the physical showroom or things like that, I think that's going to help move the needle there with discussion. I think we covered a lot. It comes back to education.
Yeah.
I think we haven't talked enough about the ROI of living green. Yes, there's. Look, we know that induction technology, heat pumps, those things are more efficient for a variety of reasons when used the right way, right? It doesn't have to be about us living in a yurt, with the outhouse. We need to approach the process the right way and say, look, this is about how do we save money over the lifetime of what you're going to own this house or this asset. How does, impact occupant health? That's going to reduce money spent on healthcare bills, right? That's going to create a healthy environment. It should have a higher sale value when you go to sell that home. But we need to be talking about that ROI more so that as a designer or anybody else, you're saying, look, I'm going to design you a green, sustainable solution because that's going to sell at a higher value for you when you go to sell this asset. I'm helping you retain more money. And it's going to cost you less during the time of ownership. So those are things I think we need to work into the conversation more because we tend to think, oh, green is just about, oh, someone feels like they want to be green because they want to give back to the earth, something they care passionately about. Well, most people don't, and that's okay, but they do care about their own health. They do care about their pocketbook. How do we pitch it that way?
It's
Steve?
Yeah, people don't want to give up comfort. So, you know, that's what you have to show people is they're not going to be sacrificing. So I would say, yes, the cooking show. We should also have a drag race with electric cars versus gas. Or redo, what was that?
I actually think that happens already. There's already.
Are there? Yeah, we're with, you redo the Hollywood movies. What was the one from the 50, you know, the drag racing one? And redo it with electric cars, you know. We just have to show people through popular culture and everything about how, you know, great it is to live, you know, how cutting edge and wonderful it is to live, you know, green.
It's really funny you say that, because when you say that, you get me thinking, many, many moons ago, I was doing a show, and I was working with, do you remember Alexandra Paul? She was on Baywatch. She was one of the first to get an EV1. And most people don't realize, they're like, if you ask someone what the first electric car was, they'll say, oh, like Tesla changed the world. It wasn't Tesla. It was General Motors. Right. General Motors came out with the EV1, arguably one of the best automotive experiments in history. This car was amazing. And the reason, and they produced like 208 of them or something like that. They leased them, not sold them, so that when they ended the experiment, they brought them all back and they crushed them. They destroyed them because they realized if people don't buy new cars but once every 20 years, we're going to have a problem. And that's what would have happened. And it put the whole industry back. And I think that to your points, like that is exactly what needs to happen. So here's what I'd like to do. What I'd love to do is before we publish this episode of the podcast and put the video out, if you would send me, you know, I'll reconnect with you, and I'll get some of the things that we talked about, some of the touch points, and I will put them, all the links, in the show notes. So here's the deal. For designers and architects who are listening to this, and homeowners too, if you want to understand this technology, if you want to be educated on it, if you want to get it, go to the show notes, click on the links, and really get it. Because, to your point, Ben, like, you're going to save money if you're a homeowner. You're going to make more money if you're a designer or an architect, because this is going to make you a stronger designer. You don't really have a choice. If you want to adapt, you can, or die, because this is kind of the future and this is where we're going. Fair enough?
This has been another episode of Doctoring Up Design featuring an incredible conversation. Thank you, Steve, Andres, Ben. This podcast is presented by Design Hardware. Thank you, Michelle Solomons and Avi Balsam with Design Hardware, for making this platform available and for your tireless support of the design and architecture community. Thank you for listening and subscribing to Doctoring Up Design. Please make sure you are subscribing to the show so you don't miss a single episode. You can find all the links and everything you need to know in the notes. See you next time.